Just like the white winged dove sings a song, sounds like it's singing.
Wow, you sound just like Stevie. I couldn't tell the difference.
Stevie with a cold.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Last
Not too
weekend of the
bad.
bachelor life.
Yes. I've been going wild and crazy.
Yeah.
Not really.
Not really. Spending a Sunday recording.
Yeah.
Talking about old comic books, that's your idea of a wild and crazy time.
Yep. Just like Steve Martin and Dan
Wild and
Aykroyd.
crazy guy.
That's what was it? Was it Dan Aykroyd? Did I get that right? That was the other
Yeah,
one.
they had the blue jump, like the blue outfits with
The leisure suits.
the leisure suits with the hats, whatever. I don't know
Yeah.
what kind of hats those are. They were like kind of like derby hats, but not. They were a little more puffier.
Yeah, maybe like a fedora or something.
Yeah.
I'm not a hat expert.
A fedora is more of a hat, isn't it? Like a fedora is like an Indiana Jones hat.
Yeah, you're probably right.
This is more like a cap looking thing. At least the photos that I used to see. I mostly know Wild and Crazy Guy just from Steve Martin, though, not that skit where he would come out, with the bow and arrow in his head and do his little skit.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a. I would not be a good host of hat cast.
We got to
I
get a hat expert for that.
don't have the credentials for that.
That's right.
But, yes, this will be my last episode of Geek Brunch Retro as a single old man.
Yeah. And then the rain will put pulled back and you won't be able to record like Keith.
Yep. Yeah. I'll have to say, I'm a married man.
I'm a married man. That's right. I'm a married man. I can't talk about bathroom.
Can't talk about Buck Rogers.
Yeah, there's too many sexy women in there. I can't talk about
I
that.
just have no opinion.
You could talk about Twiggy just fine. You just can't talk about Twiggy having sex with the other robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'll use Twiggy language.
Yeah.
Beady beady beady.
Yeep. Get our translator. So, are you nervous? I mean, I don't think you're nervous for. Let me just guess. You're not nervous for the fact that you're getting married, but maybe a little nervous for all the people that are there and the occasion itself, maybe.
Yeah, that pretty much is it. I'm not nervous at all about doing it or anything like that. I'm not, the first person to seek out being the center of attention,
Yeah.
But I'm also not totally like frightened of it either or anything like that. I can deal with it. When I was younger, like in high school and stuff like that, I didn't.
You deal with it through gas. If it's a stressful situation, you just cut one.
If everyone like, why is everyone so serious? I do, but no, it should be good. And I'm kind of just thinking about all the different elements of hoping everything comes together well, and it turns out nice how the things that we've planned turn out the way we want them to and stuff, but it's not going to be a complicated evening, so I think it'll go pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be nice. It's just different to be. I'd be more like chill and laid back if I was just going to somebody else's, obviously, but
Yeah.
since that we're the center of attention, it's about us. It's a little weird, but
Yeah. Too bad. I wonder if you'll
it'll be
have
fun.
that well, it's a smaller wedding, right? Like we're talking under 100 people, or is it more than that?
Yeah, it's like 75. Yeah.
You gotta have
So.
that thing where you danced. You have to pay to dance with the groom or the bride.
Oh, I never thought of
That's
that.
a, well, I don't know if it's a Hispanic thing, but in New Mexico we always have that, and I make a lot of money.
That's pretty fun.
It's a lot of comic books if you can, if it works.
Hello.
You there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could hear myself, but I couldn't hear you.
Oh, that's weird. I'm filling out a call quality feedback right now and
Skype.
tearing the shit out of it.
Yeah, last night it worked good. We recorded DC Noise Keithless because he didn't show up.
Oh, was
But,
it just the two of you?
yeah.
Yeah, I forgot what I was saying. I think I was just saying that we're pretty much set and as far as planning and stuff like that, so should be a good time.
That's cool. Is
You're
it
gonna and you're gonna be it.
Saturday?
Yeah. While you're eating after being at the con.
Yeah.
It's all in the evening. So
Your wedding?
yeah.
Okay.
So
Is it a church wedding or no?
no.
Okay, so it's like you're having it at some facility. And then
Yeah.
having a small reception afterwards.
Yeah, it's just all gonna be right in a row.
You should have
So.
hired me. I could have been your disc jockey.
Yeah. Play like Ohm Activate and
That's right. Burger time.
Burger Time and that
Get your
would've been
roller
sweet.
skates move. I'll play the soundtrack to Buck Rogers.
Yeah. I that's a special order, those rope pulls
Yeah, the
to do
rope
that
pulls.
dance.
That's right. And then have the roller skaters come out
Yeah.
while you
That'd
guys
be
are sitting
sweet.
at the table.
Yeah, we could get Keith, we'll put a Burger Time in the corner and Keith
Yeah.
can ignore everyone and play Burger Time.
That's right. He'll ignore everybody because there's a couple skate
Yeah.
in the middle there. He can't have that. He's a married man.
Yeah. Nobody's gonna be able to pay to dance with him. Yeah, we watched the Bling Ring last night.
Bling Ring, what is that?
Bling Ring. That was that movie about the kids in Hollywood that broke into all the stars' houses and stole from them.
It's a true story.
Yeah, they changed the names. They had to change the names, for legal reasons and stuff, but I was looking up on Bling Ring is what the media called them back when it happened. Like, I think it was like 2008, 2009 or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the movie too. It's a Sofia Coppola movie. The director that did,
The one that we like with yeah, it's going to Japan.
and that and
What is that
Virgin
movie
Suicides
called?
and a few ones. Bling Ring.
No,
That's
the other one that we watch with the Bill Murray and
Lost in
God, yeah,
Translation.
there you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
God dang, I couldn't think of that name and I like it.
Yeah. It took me a second too, which is weird because it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty interesting. I didn't realize when I was watching it how much they took from reality. And they really did take a lot. I was looking it up afterwards. Even the celebrities that they show them breaking into their houses and stuff, it's the same celebrities that they robbed in real life. Paris Hilton, they broke into Rachel Bilson's house. Both of those stars, they went multiple times. Like Paris Hilton's house, they broke into 4 or 5 times before she reported it, and they're not even sure if, it was because she didn't notice until then. Because the last time that they went, the time that she reported it, they brought this other dude with them that normally didn't go with them that took like $2 million worth of jewelry. But yeah, they were like, they would go on the internet and like, if a star posted to Facebook or Twitter that they were going to be at some kind of event or like out of town or something like that.
That was their key.
Yeah, and then they would
But
just go.
didn't these people have like good alarm systems or
Well,
no?
that's the funny thing. It's like some of them had security, like cameras.
Yeah.
One of the ways they caught is that they got caught on some security cameras, like Adriana Partridge. She's from like the Hills, I think, or something. Her house had cameras. They broke into Orlando Bloom's house because it was at the time when he was dating that Victoria's Secrets model. Lindsay Lohan, like all stars that they liked their style, so then they would go and steal their clothes. And yeah, it was pretty crazy. But yeah, the stars, they would leave like their houses unlocked. Like Paris Hilton literally had keys under the doormat in front of her front door, but they didn't even need to use them because the front door was unlocked. So they would just walk up and walk into the house. Like, I'm sure they probably all have alarm systems now. But they did get caught on security cameras, and then they were really stupid too, because the same way that the stars were sharing where they were going to be at on social media, like part of the movie, I think it doesn't hit you over the head with it, but it's kind of about social media and stuff, is these kids, they would share pictures of themselves all over Facebook and stuff, and posing with like piles of cash and designer clothes and stuff like that that they shouldn't have had. So Emma Watson,
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now
yeah,
on
she was in
Netflix.
it, and the girl from that's been in a lot of the seasons of American Horror Story, I think. What's her name? Farmiga or something, her last name. But the two of them, like there are two characters in real life. Like I said, they have different names in the movie. But they were on like 9 episodes of a E reality show called Pretty Wild, as two sisters. But well, they're not actually related. Like Emma Watson's character and her mom took in this other girl because they've known each other their whole lives, and her parents like had issues, so they took her in like without officially adopting her. But her mom is her mom was like a Playboy playmate, and
Are these people in jail now?
the two, like the boy, like the main boy in the movie, and one of the other girls that was kind of the ringleader, they served a couple years of jail. And then like Emma Watson's character, like she was sentenced to like 3 months and only served like a month or something.
After stealing all this shit?
Yeah. And she was actually like briefly in a
And then
cell next to Lindsay Lohan, like wherever she
get
stayed.
a and then they get a movie about him. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, they had all kinds of issues. Like one of the reasons that people speculated that that reality show on E got dropped, because like they filmed the pilot because they were just going to do this E reality show about this, you know, former Playboy mom that's like raising her two daughters and managing their modeling careers. And you know, like the one, not the one that Emma Watson's plays, but the other one, she ended up being like a Playboy model too.
So it's one dude and four girls?
Yeah.
Damn.
But
And was the dude with any of those girls?
like, did he
Like
hook up with
they,
them or whatever?
yeah.
No. It was like, I don't know, like if they were trying to imply that like he was in, like he was joking around and like tried on a pair of Paris Hilton's shoes because they were laughing about how big her feet are. And then like they showed the scene like later in the movie where he's like hanging out in his room and he has the shoes on. So I don't know if they were trying to imply that he
Imply
was
that he
like
might be gay.
into dressing,
Yeah, or
cross-dressing, or
crossdresser.
I don't know if that was like just something they put in the movie, but it seems like they pulled so much from reality, because I totally thought this one scene was just like played up for laughs and stuff, because the two girls, their mom is played by a comedic actress, the one that's married to Judd Apatow. I'm looking up her name. So I thought maybe because she's a comedic actress and stuff that they were playing her up a little bit, that character, making her a little funnier for the sake of the movie, Leslie Mann. But then because there's this part in the movie, like she homeschools her two girls, and like well, three girls, like Emma Watson, Tessa Farmiga, and then there's like a younger girl, and she's doing this, like she's into this weird religion called The Secret, and there's this scene where she's homeschooling them, and her homeschooling thing is like she shows them this like piece of project paper, like you get like a Target or something with all these like clips, pictures of Angelina Jolie all around it. And she's like asking them, like, all right, this is our gonna be our model, and what are some things that we like about, Angelina Jolie, and what can we learn from her and stuff like that, and what do we like about her? And the one girl goes, like, her husband, her hot bod, and she's like frustrated with them because that's, I guess, not what she's trying to communicate. So I thought, like, oh, that's kind of funny. They probably just came up with that from the for the movie. And then when I was looking into it later on, I found out that I watched this clip from the reality show, and they literally lifted it almost like verbatim from the television show. Like that's really like in reality what they did. It was really, I couldn't believe it. It's just shocking. But there's some crazy people. But yeah, the girl that Emma Watson played, apparently, like later on after the reality show was canceled after like 9 episodes, like this one reviewer called it the worst television show ever made. And for a while, she ended up with like some serious, she got arrested again for possession of heroin, had some like serious drug problems, and apparently she's clean now and married to a Canadian businessman that she met in AA, and they have a kid. But yeah, it was crazy. I just could have not. I knew it was based on reality, but it was way closer to reality than I thought when I was watching the film, I guess. I found it after that Kara was a little more aware of,
Did she
because she
rent that
remembered what it
movie
was.
or what?
Yeah, she, well, yeah, she grabbed it from the library. She grabbed a bunch of Blu-rays just to have around as options while we're off. So we watched that one because it was already getting a little late, and it was one of the shorter ones we had. So,
All right. Well, you want to talk some comics?
yes, apologies to anyone who was totally bored by that and the fact that it's not retro.
Is retro.
I
It
thought it
was
was
last
fascinating,
year the
though.
movie came
Yeah.
out.
Yeah, and it refers to events that happened. Well, it doesn't fit into our 10-year rule, but it's.
Probably 5 years prior.
Yeah, whatever. 6 or 7 years, yeah,
Tw
6 or 7 years ago. So,
2009-ish
see, little did the listeners know that when it came to celebrity gossip, our rule is only 5 years, not 10 years.
Yeah, that's true.
That was our secret all along. Yeah, let's do let's we grab go into some comics first.
All right, what do you got?
Why don't you start, since I've been blabbing about
Okay,
celebrity
well,
lifestyles.
I have two books that are, they have a theme to them that I'll talk
Okay,
about.
cool.
One of them I got from a fellow listener who sent me the last issue of Cinnamon El Ciclo, and that was Gary Arkell, so thank you so much, because he knew I reviewed 1 through 4 in this and didn't have 5, and he had 5, and he just sent it to me, so that was really cool.
Yeah, I saw that. So actually, now I have a prepared list of comics that I need here. Just kidding.
And the other one, I don't think is from a listener, but more of a Facebook friend, because I was working on the finishing my Malibu, and I was missing the Stranger's Annual number 1, and he sent that to me.
Nice.
So that was really cool. But and man, I gotta get his name. Shit. See how prepared I am. But I'll talk about Gary's book first, which is by Jen Van Meter and Francisco Perozzoni, Zini. He draws a lot like Fusco from 100 Bullets. I mean, I just think it's the
Right.
same artist. But this continues off where there was that girl that lost her dad and in a bank robbery, and Cinnamon was going after all of them, and she killed her father, so she had a vengeful thing against Cinnamon. And this kind of takes place in current time, and that one lady takes care of a bunch of people that are street kids, like ones that could go into prostitution and stuff. And she happens to house one of the senator's daughters. Well, one of the senator's daughters had to run away from her father, and for good reason. And they kind of firebombed the place, and that's where they left off. They stole the daughter back. He had two guys steal her. And then Cinnamon and this lady walk into the room, and the two guys that had kidnapped her found dead. So they have to figure out how to get to the girl because they want to rescue her, and they still have tension between them because of what happened in the past. Like Cinnamon had killed her father, so she still has this vengeful thing. But they work together. They go onto the grounds. They shoot up a lot of guards. Cinnamon isn't afraid of killing, while the other one won't kill. She'll shoot to wound and stuff like that. But Cinnamon will kill, and they end up. It's weird because the senator has the daughter, and then the mother is like naive to that the senator's corrupt, like her own husband, and she's like surprised to see her daughter and happy to see her daughter. And then the senator eventually the guards will not shoot Cinnamon and the other girl because the media is there with helicopters and stuff over the house, so they're like. They're like, we can't shoot these. They're unarmed. And he's like, well, arm them. Let them pick up their guns. Shoot them. And he pulls a gun on his daughter, and he realizes the mother's like, what the hell is my husband into? But the husband ends up shooting himself in the head. So that was a weird ending to a very tense situation. And even though the two women end up as they end up working together to solve this issue. They still have that tension between them. Like, they pull guns on each other at the very end because she still hurt that she killed her father. And she tells, hey, my father wasn't even the bank robber. He was just driving the car. And you killed him dead. And she goes, Cinnamon says, yeah, I know. He told me. And he apologized, and I shot him. She still shot him. So that's when she got really upset. And then she pulls the gun like she's gonna shoot her in the back. And she says, "But you better pray I don't have a daughter, because then the vengeful thing will start over again." But I really liked this series, man. It was good, and I had no idea what it was about. I knew of the Western character Cinnamon from Jonah Hex. But I didn't know this is like a modern take on her in today's world, and really good book. I enjoyed it, and I was glad I got to finish it so soon. That's what I really liked about it. I got to finish while the story was real fresh in my head, so I didn't have to like remember anything.
Yeah, you weren't, or I still were kind of hooked on it.
Yeah, relatively fresh.
Yeah. Doesn't always happen too. Sometimes you don't get a chance to grab it and then sort of forget about it and doesn't stay with you. Or you forget why you were hooked on it or you wanted to finish it in the first place. So was that supposed to have taken place in the regular DC universe, or is it more of a side story, or?
It's more of a side story, but it could be in the DC universe and you'd never know.
Yeah, it's like nothing to say that it's not.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's cool. Yeah, it was very, very nice of Gary.
Yeah, it's very cool because I was going to order that, and then to get it like that was even better. It was like, yeah. And then if you order it, you always don't know when you'll place your order, or if you'll even be interested in it when you place your order. Even though I knew I wanted it because of my ADD, I might be into Jimmy Olsen at the time. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows where the wind will blow you? All right. Well, yeah, speaking of stuff, picking stuff up, and I still have a ways back, I had picked up a pile of Bronze Age DC stuff, and just a pretty big variety of stuff, and I'm still picking up the occasional issue that I got then, and for this and reading it, and it kind of works well for the show because there was a few issues around the same, like of the same title around the same issue, but for the most part, it was a kind of a broad range of different titles and random issues, so it kind of works well to pick out different things. And I know this is the Secret Society of Supervillains, which I never have read any issues of. And this was, I believe, a really short-lived series, right? One of the ones that got canceled in the implosion.
Yeah, it was really good though, and it was really odd.
Yeah, that's what I got from that. It's number th I got issue number 3 here. It's and so it's jumping in a little bit, but I mean this time of in this era of comic books, I find that it's really easy to they tend to be written, with the understanding that people might just be picking them up off the newsstand, So I feel like a lot of Bronze Age comics, you can pick up pretty easily, and just read. This issue is called War for Earth Death, all one word, Earth Death. And it was written by David Kraft. The artists are Pablo Marcos and Vince Coletta. I'm assuming penciler and inker there, with colors by Carl Gafford and letters by Ben Oda. But yeah, it opens up with Darkseid. And he's got one of his minions, we don't see their face. It's meant to be a secret, groveling in front of him, who's failed. And he's asking, like a lot of Darkseid's minions tend to do, for Darkseid's favor and give him another chance and stuff. So we get a double page spread where we see that Darkseid has all these like supervillain kind of monitors, where he's looking at all these. He's looking basically at his secret society that. Of supervillains that he formed. We've got Manhunter, which this is not a Manhunter I'm super familiar with, if you have any details to fill in, but he's got a like a white tunic over like orange and pink, and he's got like red hair, and he just wears like a domino mask. It's kind of like a Kid Flash style helmet
Is
or
he
a
on
face.
the
But
Manhunter, the
yeah, if you're looking at the cover, he's in the middle of the screen that
Yeah, he's I think his name is Paul Kirk. He was famous in a backup in I think Detective Comics that Walter Simonson did. So
Oh,
they like
okay. That
re-released
sounds
his
familiar.
Manhunter stories, I think, in a trade paperback that just came out fairly recently. But I'm familiar with I'm not too familiar with that Manhunter. There's been a legacy of Manhunters. A matter of fact, I think there's four generations of Manhunters. And if you read the current female Manhunter, it links them all together kind of. But
Yeah, I mean, I know Kate Spencer, that's her name, right? The female one. Yeah. So she's cool. I like that series was good, but
That was by far my favorite, but I didn't read this backup Walt Simonson stuff, you know. But I did read this stuff. I did read this particular title, which I really liked because I've always liked the villains, and I thought it was odd that this book focused on Captain Comet. It was just weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, he's one of the other persons on the vid screens. You got Star Sapphire, Copperhead, Gorilla Grodd, Mantis, Mirror Master, Sinestro, and Captain Cold. So what's happened is there's prior to this issue, there's a conflict where, Mantis, true to his characteristics in the fourth world that we covered, is wants to be he's kind of groveling and wants to be in charge, but he's also at the moment he's loyal to Darkseid because he wants his wants to take advantage of that situation and have power over the other villains in the group, whereas some of the others are not really down with being Darkseid's minions. So Mantis is trying to get them to yield while Captain Comet's knocked out, and he's trying to intimidate them and stuff like that. He blasts Captain Cold and takes him out, but neither Manhunter or Star Sapphire any interest in yielding to him. He's basically going to have to take them out. So there's a little bit of battle between them and everything. But then we check in. We see that Copperhead is in jail, but then he's rescued and somebody sets off an explosion or something like that to bring him out of his cell. But whoever it is that rescued him, he's not too actually too excited. He's like, "No, not you, not you." So he's not too excited by whoever rescued him and stuff. But then there's this kind of funny scene where we go to this burger joint, and Mirror Master and Captain Boomerang in their civilian identities are at a burger joint, like I said, and they're getting burgers and talking about, like, we gotta pull a joint, pull a robbery together or something like that soon, blah blah blah, and so their meals come to $3.02, and they're so cheap that that Mirror Master uses his powers to hypnotize the clerk there and make her think that they disappeared right before her eyes. But it's just like a, he uses like mirror contact lenses, so they're not even willing to pay the $3. So yeah, the Secret Society, their headquarters right now is called the Sinister Citadel, which is awesome. And they have this, it's like a skyscraper downtown, and they get back there, and it's such like a, one of the fun things about this is such a hodgepodge of villains hanging out together, and such a strange alliance, because they get back there and there's the Jack from the what do they call the playing card villains that the JLA fight all the time.
I'm trying to think.
The Royal Flush Gang. Yeah. So he's there, and Sinestro, and a few other guys and stuff. But yeah, it's funny to me to see Sinestro here, and Manhunter shows up, and like they all get pissed at each other, and Jack and and Sinestro almost get in a fight. But Manhunter here is basically spreading the word that their benefactor, the person that put this together, that Darkseid is not to be trusted, and he's just using them, and that they need to like stand up basically. So he's able to convince them. I think Abracadabra is here too. He convinces all of them there to work as a team.
Did he want to reach out and grab you? Abra,
Is that a reference to something I should know?
abracadabra. You don't know that song? It's an
What?
80s
What's it
song.
from? Oh, well, I guess I could know
Abracadabra, I want to reach out and grab you.
it. Maybe it's your rendition. I don't know.
Well, maybe I'll find that song and put it into the beginning of this.
Yeah. maybe if I heard it for real.
Oh,
Maybe I don't recognize your version. No, I don't know. Maybe I haven't heard that song. It doesn't sound familiar though. So yeah, there's a guy working there though that's like kind of like the butler in the building. He's spying on them, so he's aware that they're like teaming up to go down and go after Darkseid. But there's a bit with where Hal Jordan actually shows up and has like a back and forth with Starfire a little here though, but Mantis has Captain Cold, Captain Comet, and Gorilla Grodd captive. So the ones that are free that have teamed up, they go in to rescue the rest of them and take out Mantis and his lackeys and stuff like that. And then there's a bit of a battle, or there's a kind of a funny moment where Captain Comet and Gorilla Grodd both throw punches towards Mantis at the same time, and so it's basically gets caught in a knuckle sandwich there. So these villains are feeling pretty high on themselves at the end because Mantis escapes, but they've pretty much driven him off. So there's a pretty big team of them gathered together, but Darkseid, we see at the end, is watching it all go down, and they grow insolent, they dare to mock me, therefore they must be disciplined. And we see, although it was he's shown on the cover really, so there's really no mystery, but the interiors make it seem like they wanted you to be a mystery, that it's actually Kalibak who was groveling, and he sends or he Darkseid's going to go to Earth and take Kalibak with him and give Kalibak a chance to redeem himself. And next issue, Rebellion in the Ranks, the coming of Kalibak the Cruel and the super slugfest of the century. So it was pretty neat. I liked it, just the it pretty much all villains except for Green Lantern showing up on one page, and I can see how when you had the Secret Six, especially prior to and during Infinite Crisis, how they were a group that didn't really want to go with the big gathering of the villains and wanted to do their own thing. And we're kind of like the outsiders. I can see how that like kind of takes some cues from this, or as this is kind of like a predecessor, sort of. So.
I like the cover a lot, but I don't like the drawing of Darkseid there is.
On the cover?
On the cover, it looks
No,
really non-like him other than the color shading.
Yeah.
And even Kalibak looks more non-bestial. More like a man.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Pablo Marcos, because the interiors don't look like the cover, so it must be a different cover artist. I don't.
I don't mind what's happening in the screen. I think that looks cool, where they're fighting.
Oh, I actually found beneath Darkseid's chin, there's a Ernie Chua signature, so that's who did the cover.
It could
So.
just be the profile that looks weird, but
Yeah, it is
it's
weird
like
for
taken
sure.
from the side of his face, and it doesn't look as chiseled or like you usually see Darkseid.
Yeah. No, it's more of like his face usually is like his top of his blue helmet kind of comes farther forward, and he doesn't have such a defined features. So
All right, so my next one is The Strangers, which I also got from a Facebook friend, Andrew Sharpar, who saw that I was lacking one issue, and he went to go find it at his comic shop and sent me that. Plus, he also sent me a sketch of Big Barda, which was fucking awesome. So in this, the Strangers. What was at one time my favorite, at least because it was like a team book. The characters were like Atom Bomb, Electrocute, sorry, Grenade, Lady Killer, Spectral, Ural, and Zip Zap. Electric, they were the thing about this is they were all in a subway car, and everyone in that subway car that had been hit with this lightning or whatever it was, got powers. And there was a subset of them that went evil and a subset that went and became the strangers. Electrocute was probably the most interesting one because there's like this villain in the Milestone Ultraverse called JD Hunt. He's like a rich son of a gun. He's like a kingpin. And Electrocute was his sex bot, sex toy. And she gained sentience from the accident. And
Oh yeah, I forgot about that, but I remember hearing about that. That's crazy.
it's kind of a cool concept. And then Atom Bomb, who's really focused in this book, he's a student who gains the ability to rearrange matter. Grenade, he's also a friend of Bob's, probably his best friend. He could fire explosive blasts. Lady Killers, a fashion designer, has the tracking ability. Plus, she hits everything she aims for, so she's got like a bullseye type feature. Spectral, he's able to change different colors, and each color has a different power, like red's enhanced strength, orange is fire manipulation, yellow's flight, green's healing, blue's water manipulation, indigo's like space vacuum survival, violet's protection. Ural is a sorceress, kind of like a Zatanna, if you will. Zip Zap is like a flash. He can run around real fast. But those are the strangers, and this story is an annual, and unfortunately, it wasn't easy. I have the first issue. This is a part two of the annual series. The one is told, other one's told in Nightman annual. And this is continued, and you open up the page, and it's like the very first annual for the Strangers starring Nightman. This is it, 50-page finale to the greatest Ultraverse story ever told. The writer Steve Englehart with layouts by Rick Hoberg, Barbara Kalaberg, and Scott Reed and John Strangeland on finishes. So this is there is a villain. Called the Pilgrim in the Ultraverse, and he's kind of planning seven bombs within the Stranger's town, and they have to find all the bombs and deactivate them. So they break up into teams, and I imagine in the Nightman annual, they break up into teams of two, and they all go out to defuse the bombs, and they succeed on all of them. And then this one just continues off with that, and the story opens up with Electrocute, and she's with her what you think is her boyfriend Grenade, that there's like a relationship, but there she thinks there's bombs over in this particular area, and he doesn't believe her, and he says, "I'm just gonna leave you here." But this guy called he's like a knight, he's Tech Knight. He shows up and starts to help her while she takes off, and they do find a bomb there, and Tech Knight kisses her like through the mask and armor and everything. I guess he's Tech Knight is like Wildfire in the Legion of Superheroes. Like he can't come out of his armor, you know what I mean? But he kisses her through the thing, and she's like, "Wow, you know, that was a good kiss." And she says, "But I think you're with Grenade." And she's like, "No, I'm not with nobody. I don't know why you guys take sexual things so seriously." She's like, but she, if you think about it, she was a sex bot before, so once she gained sentience, maybe she retained some of what she was used for. I don't know. To think of sex more as pleasure, I don't know. But they actually defuse that bomb, and then there's some more bombs that they defuse. You don't really see too much of the other team, other than they break out. There's a lot of Nightman in this. And he's the one that uncovers who the villain is, who Pilgrim is, and it turns out, I mean, the big reveal in this is that Pilgrim is Atom Bomb, who's one of the strangers who's turned evil. And I didn't never remember this happening, but I didn't stick with strangers long enough to know. And he turned out to be the bad guy, and they all had to defeat him, and it was kind of like at the end of the issue that they were kind of crushed because he was like their secondary leader, you know? So they're like devastated. Plus Grenade, who actually blew him up. One of the guys, Spectral, says, You've never exploded that hard before. And he's got like a weird costume, like it's like
Oh,
this
did you
little
post that
vest.
page?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've never exploded that hard before. So he basically killed his best friend, so that was the sad part of it. And everybody's torn up at the end of that. It says, "Is there life after disaster? Strangers number 19 on sale next week." And there is a little interesting thing at the end of it by Chris Ulm, who was the kind of the Ultraverse head honcho back in the day. He had
Yeah.
a thing that said, "Malibu and Marvel, what does it mean to you?" So it's kind of funny reading this in retrospect,
Yeah.
based on what happened. But Chris Ulm was basically saying, "This is a good thing. You're gonna get Ultraverse toys. We have our Ultraverse animated TV show happening. We're gonna have Marvel team up with our Malibu characters, and God will, all this good stuff is happening." And a year from now, you never saw any of it. You
Yeah.
kind of saw it peter out, but I thought that was pretty interesting. It was an okay issue. It wasn't as good as most of the Stranger stuff, but it was mostly focused on the Pilgrim and Nightman, and them trying to find out who the villain was, who was trying to blow them all up, and they were defusing bombs all over the place. But I thought it's a good action book. It just wasn't a good book to jump in and you get to remember who these characters were, It
Yeah.
didn't show a lot of their personality other than the relationship between Grenade and Atom Bob, which is a weird
Yeah.
name. His name is Bob, and they instead of making him Atom Bomb, they just made him Atom
Adam
Bob.
Bob, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, the guy that runs the Longbox Graveyard blog, he's good friends with Chris Ulm. I believe they work together nowadays at like an app development company or something. Because the guy that does Longbox Graveyard, he did actually do a little bit of writing for Malibu back in the day. Wrote a few comics for their line and stuff. But yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that's kind of fun to discover. Like last time when I was talking about that readers poll, their favorite Avengers from that issue that I covered. It's fun when you are reading paper. That is one thing that you can discover is little things like that that will get left out if they're digitalized, can be fun to see that. Besides the ads and stuff and the letters, sometimes you get these little information columns and stuff because that was the main way for, they didn't have the internet really, so that was a good way to reach your readers, just put it in the comic they're reading, But
Yeah.
so yeah, I like the origin. I like that the subway thing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a cool thing, and then there is like an underlying theme in here because I was like, what else am I gonna read? And the next books that I'm gonna talk about were I chose because I was trying to find the Nightman Annual so I can read both parts. And I couldn't find it in the particular box where I have most of my Ultraverse that I acquired. I mean, I know I have it somewhere. It just wasn't easy for me to get to. And the one box that I have a lot of the Ultraverse is easy to get to, but that it didn't have that particular issue, so I ended up pulling some Nightman out of it. And it was kind of cool because it got me to remember a lot more about that J.D. Hunt billionaire guy. And how he was, and he was kind of an evil dude, because he plays kind of like one of the main nemesises of Nightman. And Nightman had a TV show too, so the Ultraverse didn't like peter out. I think they had a model that was ready for success, and then Marvel acquired them, and they just let that success go. In other words, Ulm and the Malibu team had built up this universe, and then it just kind of petered out. But I don't think it. I think if they would have never acquired them, that things might have been slightly different. Not guaranteeing it, because this was close to the 90s, where comics were hot, and then they weren't. So I don't know if they would have survived it, but they had a good enough a chance as Valiant or anybody else. And if you look at some of the failures of the companies like Valiant and Malibu, they went out differently than other companies. They didn't peter out. They got acquired. In other words, Valiant got acquired by Acclaim, and this got acquired by Marvel, and then the downfall came. So it's a little bit different than you going under. Do you know what I mean? They probably made a lot of money, and they're in hindsight, it would be interesting to talk to this Chris Ulm. I would love to have him on this show just so we could talk a little bit of Malibu. If we could, that would be cool.
Yeah, there was a
Yeah,
this might have been a couple of years ago now, but
mentioned it before. In the Logbox Graveyard had a episode about that.
Yeah, it was, well, he kind of hosted it for We Talk Comics podcast. But that was really interesting. But yeah, it was an interesting time, and yeah, it might, you never know, but I mean, Marvel acquired them not really for their properties, and they didn't really have probably the workforce to maintain all those other characters. They just continued to focus on the Marvel properties they already established. Whereas if Malibu stayed independent, maybe, they obviously they would have focused on the Malibu characters and, maybe continued, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, even though Marvel and DC are huge compared to other comic book companies, and they both publish a lot of titles, there's still a limit to it, you almost kind of see that with the New 52 and the Wildstorm universe. Like, they're using those characters, and like they're using them a lot, like in right now and in Future's End and stuff like that, but they didn't so much become title characters that could hold a title and stuff. You kind of maybe shuffle characters in and out, and there's certain characters like Batman that you're always going to have books, and then other some that you just kind of like maybe you'll have a book for a couple years or something like that, and there's only so much they can do at a time, though. And both companies now, they've acquired a number of other companies, and they have so many properties that belong to them, but there's they can't do them all. But some of the characters that they own that they're not even using could probably flourish and make enough money for a smaller company. They're not going to meet like Marvel's, like these Malibu characters not going to meet Marvel's expectations, but like if you had a little startup like the new Valiant does, then they might make enough money for that company, But Marvel's not going to give away anything for free. Like, here, have these characters. We're not doing anything with them. So it's kind of interesting how that works.
Well, if they made like several million on the transaction, they probably did well. I
Yeah, I don't know
don't know what that transaction was, but
what that
that's
looked
what
like,
small companies like to do, is they like to build up their vision, and if they're successful, sell it. And then you walk away with a good paycheck, you know? So I think we just lost connectivity again. Hello.
Hello.
It's gonna be a bear to edit, man.
You're gonna have your job cut out for you
God
there.
dang.
Jeez.
It's already in like four chunks.
But yeah, all I was saying was just that, yeah, sometimes they want to just sell things off because otherwise they're gonna be like working their butt off,
Yeah.
So, Alrighty. Well, I'll connect my next book to the previous one loosely. I'll keep the secrets going. Secret circle.
Secret Circle.
I have Secret Origins featuring the Rogues Gallery of the Flash. This was actually Secret Origins number 41. And it's got kind of a neat cover where the word Flash is are huge letters, and the rogues are sitting on top of the letters. You've got Weather Wizard, Captain Boomerang, Trickster, Pied Piper, Captain Cold, and Heat Wave, and the Flash is laying on the ground, knocked out. But this is how many pages is this? This came out in 1989, and it's pretty thick.
It's like a Carmen Infantino cover, just the way he draws the villains. It's
Yeah, I don't know if there's a credit for it. There's a lot of different artists in the inside.
that cover's been mocked, done like several times differently. Just recently, they've done something similar to that.
Yeah, it's cool. So the writers of this was Dan Mishkin and Gary Cohen. And it's the book's broken up into chapters, kind of like an annual might be. So there's a lot of artists.
You know who did the cover?
Who's that?
Mike Mignola.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, now that
Yeah,
you say
that's
that,
interesting.
especially like in the shadowing of the letters across Flash's body.
Yeah.
You can see it kind of in the faces a little bit. Yeah, I can definitely see that now that you say it. That's cool. So interior artists, we have six chapters. Chapter one is Paris Collins and Timmy or Tim Zahn, Dazan. Chapter two is Grant Meum and Aiken and Garvey. Chapter three is Howard Simpson and Anthony Van Bruggen. Chapter four, Ian Carr and Kevin Branch. Chapter five, Trevor Van Eden by himself. And chapter six, Don Simpson by himself. And it's interesting because it has an overarching story. Like there's this guy, he's a bald white dude in a suit, and he has amnesia. He acts as if he is powerful. He's like, never again will my power be restrained. They will tremble, they will quake, my very name will chill their bones. All will bow before I can't seem to remember my name. So like a policeman comes up to him because he's acting kind of strange on the streets, and he has a little bit of a scuffle with the cop, and has to escape from him. And he finds himself at this place called P. Gambini Taylor, and in the shop window are a bunch of dummies with rogue costumes on them. And something about the costumes jogs his memory. He can't really. There's something about familiar about them, but he doesn't really know why. So he starts knocking on the window of the shop, and the guy's like, the shop owner is looking at the guy, and he is just going to kind of tell him off at first, but then he realizes, hey, there's something about this guy that kind of reminds me of a. It's almost as if he's recognizing the characteristics in the guy that he could be somebody that might be a customer that would want a supervillain costume. So the guy comes in, they talk, and he's still acting really crazy, like yelling stuff like, I'm no fool to be so humiliated. Whoever is responsible for my memory being lost must pay. I will crush them. And the guy that owns the shop eventually tells him, you must be a supervillain. I bet you're one of the rogues. Somebody must have stole your memory. And so that's the framing story, and the shop owner, proceeds to tell him the origins of various rogues to see if it will jog his memory. And that's so if he starts with the trickster, this is the James Jesse of the Flying Jessies trickster. So you know, talk about how he was in the he was like in the circus like Dick Gordon, kind of was like a almost similar situation, but instead of his parents being killed, he was
Who's Dick Gordon?
he's a new character.
Are you reading Multiversity or something? Or is there like a Dick
Yeah.
Gordon?
He's Earth, it's Earth Chris, where
Where Gordon had sex with the Grayson mom and they made Dick Gordon?
No, just nothing that crazy. Just you know, Dick Grayson was adopted by
Commissioner
Commissioner
Gordon.
Gardner instead of Batman and became a detective instead of Robin.
And him and they had like stepson daughter sex because he has that thing with Barbara Gordon, right? That's weird. That's a weird world you live in.
I'm sorry. It is a strange place. Like I said, Ivy Town. It's actually Ivy Town, not Earth Chris. Everything's
Ivy
struck down
Town
in
is
nature.
weird if you go read the especially if you read Ivy Town from Gail Simone and Rick Remender
Yeah,
where the Atom's
exactly.
from. That's a weird place, man.
It is. It is very weird. Anyway, the trickster, he invents these shoes that allow him to walk on air, and you know, like the rogues do, they're all about the technology and stuff in it. He's his family's proud of him, but he wants actually more money, so that's when he starts robbing banks and stuff. Actually, it's kind of neat though that there's a little bit of an exchange where it's Booster Gold that comes after him. So this is post-crisis, you know, the Secret Origin series, kind of like they're doing now with the New 52. Like this was showing the origins of these characters in the post-crisis world. So we have Booster Gold going after Trickster, and they have a little bit of a fight where Trickster tosses him the bag that he's carrying that Booster thinks is full of money. And it turns out to have like an anvil in it, and he just like, you know, does the whole trickster thing. So, chapter three is about the Pied Piper, and just talks about how he was always all about music and stuff, and even though he was deaf when he was born, and he was able to produce sounds that worked as that would hypnotize people, and it's kind of a funny panel where he's playing the harmonica next to a girl's ear, like as teenagers. She's like, "Oh, heart, I can't get enough of you when you're playing your music." So he decides as well to go to for a life of crime. Then we have like a little interlude where Trickster at the end of his story. So it's like all kind of tied together, which is neat. Trickster at the end of his story, he goes, he's saying how he's got an errand to run, and so we see him now showing up at the Pied Piper's place, and the Pied Piper's playing away on his pipes, and he's like, "Damn it, shut the door! Oh man, now you've really done it. You've got to stop those notes before they're totally out of control." Because his notes are actually exist, like the notes that he's playing, they actually are tangible, and Trickster's sweeping them up in a dustpan that he pulls out of who knows where, and it's like, "What the hell's going on in here?" And they go into this huge warehouse room, and there's this gigantic note. It's just like, I don't know, they maybe it's like 30, 40 feet tall. And Pied Piper says he's been trying to get rid of this note for over a week and he can't get it to disappear. So it's just kind of really weird. And Pied Piper asks Trickster if he's got any ideas. He's like, well, I'll try to come up with something to help you out, but we got a bigger problem. And Pied Piper says, what? He's like, he's back in town and he is bolded. And so they're worried about somebody that showed up. Chapter 4 is about Captain Cold and Heat Wave. So they tell
Does it
Captain
get
Cold's origin.
any into the Pied Piper's sexual preference in that origin or no?
No.
'Cause he is a gay man.
Do you know if this version was or?
This is post-crisis, so yeah.
Yeah.
Unless
No, I
the
mean.
this is this Wally West Flash?
It would have been, yeah,
Yeah,
1989.
then yeah. Matter of fact,
With,
he became really good friends with Wally. He
yeah,
Pied
that I remembered.
Pied Piper is the one rogue post-crisis that kind of was a rogue, but he had a good heart, and he still does. Like if you read the current Pied Piper, he still crosses that line of hero and villain, you know?
Yeah, well, in Heat Wave too, this version of Heat Wave, at least early on in post-crisis, they talk about in here how he's at the point that the story's going on, he's kind of a hero. Captain Cold's origin's pretty straightforward, not much different. He gets, technology and uses it. Heat Wave, he gets locked in a cold storage freezer, and he uses his breath to thaw out his hands in the handle and finally escapes. But after that, he's obsessed with heat. Like, they show like this room where a couple people are dressed in like summer clothes, and he's sitting there in front of a candle with a parka on and a winter hat and a glove and stuff. He runs away from home, becomes a fire eater briefly, and then he turned to crime with the heat gun that he developed. But in the current day, as far as this comic goes, they show him, he shows up at a place where a fire is raging out of control in an apartment building, and he runs in when the firefighters aren't able to get in there. And he has this technology. Well, he brings in this like fire blanket and covers up this family so that they can use it to escape. But then he goes back in, and he's got this new device that he's come up with that he's testing out, and it goes off and it sucks all the heat energy into this little device. It looks like almost like a little tiny charcoal grill or something, so everyone's cheering for him and stuff. But Captain Cold shows up, and he's got Trickster and Pied Piper with him, and he says, we know that you're doing the hero thing, but we need you. We need all of us to get together because he is back. And then we go on to chapter 5 is Captain Boomerang and the Weather Wizard. Weather Wizard's pretty similar to other origins I've seen from him in this version. Talks about his brother, and his brother came up with the technology for the weather wand. But he's not as good of a guy as his brother, so he steals it and becomes the weather wizard. They don't go so much into Captain Boomerang's. Oh, yeah, Captain Boomerang's origin is just a couple pages as well, real quick. I think he has kind of has a similar. Just his family's company, or there was a company called WW Wiggins, not his family's, but they wanted Boomerangs to be the next yo-yo or hula hoop, so they hired Digger Harkness, the promotional symbol. But Harkness used his access to their facilities to create his own boomerang weapons. So the last chapter is kind of a finishing up the overarching story that all these origins have been working through. And finally, the shop owner says, these villains, they all are against, they want to go up against a superhero and make a reputation. And he's, What superhero? What are you talking about? And he says, well, the Flash, obviously. And the Flash actually is what finally like triggers something in his mind, and he finally remembers everything. But we're not privy to that yet. As this bald man asks the shopkeeper to make him a costume. And then we see the rogues, the six of them that we've covered. They show up at this tailoring shop, and Gorilla Grodd comes crashing out of the front of the shop building. So at first, this is who they've been worried about, apparently, and so they're freaking out, and the rogues are trying to take down Grodd, and finally something happens where so he's confronting the trickster, and in desperation, trickster punches Grodd in the jaw, and then he's shocked because he actually knocked him out. It was just really a desperate move. He didn't expect to have any chance of success. So he's like, afterwards, he's staring at his fist, like, "How the hell did I do that?" It's like, maybe that high energy refined sugar diet is really working. Or maybe I've developed real superpowers and this is my origin. But Heatwave's like, or maybe this isn't really Grodd. And they pull Grodd's head off, and it turns out to be our bald guy, and he's just in a Grodd suit. So the owner comes out, and at that point they just think that he's some kind of imposter pretending to be Grodd. And the shop owner comes out and explains, actually, this really is Grodd, but he's transferred his consciousness into the mind of this guy. And they got him, so the rogues got him tied up, and it's just he's sitting there in his boxer shorts because they take the costume off of him. So they start laughing. He's like, isn't this hilarious? All these years, Grodd's been such a threat to us, and now look, he's just some jerk in boxer shorts. But the shop owner starts freaking out. Don't, you're anchoring him. You don't understand. The last mental barriers will fall. He's starting to shake and sweat because they're humiliating him. And no more. Now Grodd is truly Grodd. He.
He's sitting there in his underpants.
Yeah. As a human, but then they get him so angry that he turns back into the real Grodd and smashes the ropes and starts kicking the shit out of the rogues. And just about he's about to like really destroy them all. The note from earlier, that huge like 30, 40 foot tall note that's been following the Pied Piper around, comes flying towards them and hits Grodd in the back of the head and knocks him out. And so the rogues all take off, and the shop owner, just in case that wasn't enough strange twists for you, the shop owner drags Grodd back towards the door of his store, and saying, "Now, Mr. Super Gorilla, come along with me. You should know by now that this mind transfer ploy never works." And he walks in, and there's another shop owner that looks exactly like him. Starts talking to him. He says, "Thanks for your help." And the other guy says, "I had to help. He's far too dangerous to leave free. But I don't have to tell that to the head of Gorilla City, do I, Salivar?" And so the other shop owner changes shape, and it turns out to be Salivar from Gorilla City, the one that always ends up coming after Grodd when Grodd gets through. And he says, apparently Grodd, to get past Gorilla City's telepathic sensors, he completely suppressed all his thoughts and implanted it in a hypnotic command that would make his amnesia. Well, Salivar messed with his mind so that the instead of turning back into Grodd, he would continue to have amnesia and not who he was, know who he was. So shop owner says, "What about the poor man Grodd replaced?" And Salivar says, "His mind is safe in Gorilla City. He will be exchanged once more when we return there with no memory of this. Farewell, my friend."
Sounds pretty
Ooh.
cool approach.
It was wild. It was pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty neat. One little neat thing is the editor on this was Mark Waid. Pre his writing career, and it was kind of a neat issue. Like I said, the art changed throughout, but they had it at each of the chapter breaks. So I like that approach if they're going to have multiple artists. It was pretty goofy, some of the plot contrivances, but it like they definitely got the tone of the rogues down. And I'm always a fan of them, so. And
Cool.
they go a lot through a lot of changes in post-crisis, by the Geoff Johns era.
Yeah.
There'd be a different Captain Boomerang and a different Trickster and stuff. So he did a lot with Heat Wave too.
Captain
So,
Boomerang turned to a kid or a younger dude, and so did Trickster. But Trickster still existed, like the older Trickster was still around. He just was not Trickster.
The new Captain Boomerang was the other one's son, right?
Yeah. But the new Boomerang had the Speed Force. I mean, he could run fast. That's what was weird.
Yeah, it wasn't just based on trick boomerangs.
Yeah.
So.
Now the new Boomerang can generate boomerangs.
Always changing it up.
Yeah.
But I find it's kind of. I almost find these Secret Origin series more interesting when they're not current. Like it's like I almost like reading this more than the new one. Like I like to kind of go back and see what how they defined the origin of a character at a certain time in the past, in a more of a historical sense.
Then save your other Secret Origin for 10 years and then read it again. And then you'll feel the same way.
I could put them in a little time capsule, bury in my backyard.
That's right.
Or not, A box in the closet might be easier.
Yeah. So my final book is, or books, but it's 8 and 9 of Nightman. I pulled these out because I hadn't read them, and I was looking for the annual, and it's still the same writer that wrote the annual. It's still Steve Englehart, and the artist is Kyle Holtz, which Kyle Holtz is a weird artist for me because I didn't used to like his stuff when he was coming out because it looked very he tended to draw horror books a lot, like it was a dark style, kind of like in the Kelly Jones type. The style is kind of like in the Kelly Jones format, like real dark and exaggerated. And but now I found I really like it. Like he's currently drawing, like every time the Billy the Kid come out with from the Goon series, I really like that stuff. And when he does do work, I enjoy it. But now I'm rereading it, and I really like his art style. So this was from 1994. You open up the book, and it shows the limited edition available May 2nd, the first movie that's faithful to the comic book, because it is the comic book. Firearm Number Zero. What begins in a live action film ends in a full color comic book. Brought to you by James Robinson. So I actually own this thing. I bought the VCR tape along with the comic.
Nice.
And it is a cool time. I was excited when these books were coming out because they were fresh, and they were I love like world building books. Like I love continuity. So like when other companies that attempt to do that, what Marvel and DC do, I really enjoy it. But Nightman is a character that is kind of tightly coupled to the Stranger for that JD character, that rich guy, who's his villain. The scene opens up with a bunch of characters, like power players within the city. And they're talking about Nightman and whether he's good, and then the attacks on the city, because there's a lot of dead women that are showing up, and they think it's a werewolf, and then they don't know whether to trust Nightman or not. But the one detective that works for the police force trusts Nightman, and this is a werewolf, and he opens up killing one woman and almost killing another. And then this cop comes back in, and Nightman wants to take this werewolf down, and he's having an affair with another cop, which is like a no-no, I think, in the office. But Nightman knows about it, which is looks to be an interesting thing that's going on sexually in the office. But JD is at a Silicon Valley offices, and he's trying to develop this Tech Knight armor. It's really interesting because we just saw Tech Knight in the annual. This Tech Knight armor is a darker rendition of that. The other one is colorful, kind of like an Iron Man Tech Knight. This is like a really dark looking one, unicolor cyborg Tech Knight. And he's like, we need to build this thing. We need to build weapons. The first time, we tried this, it failed. Nightman still survived. This Tech Knight, he'll definitely take out Nightman, because Nightman doesn't have powers. He has like the power to read minds, but other than that, in his night vision goggles, he can hear thoughts and stuff, but he doesn't have like superpowers or anything. He's kind of like Batman, but this werewolf guy, he's a Russian, and he ends up going out to the forest so he could become the werewolf again. Nightman tracks him down. He actually develops this rope that will tighten, and he actually has a huge battle with the werewolf guy, and he captures him, and that's how the series ends. And then there's this mysterious character, Rianamon, who leaves him some like a message saying, "Thinking of you," and it's a character that I think he's had a relationship with or something, and they're playing along with it. And you see a little bit of it in issue 9, but not. So the werewolf guy's in jail, and this is the story of J.D. Hunt trying to break out the werewolf guy to cause more problems for Nightman. And J.D. Hunt lets his son control the the tech armor. It is crazy because he's an awful father, and there's some serious like child abuse shit going on here. Like, he lets this kid go nuts with it, kills a bunch of cops. The kid kills a bunch of cops trying to break out the werewolf guy, and then when he fails, when the kid fails, because this is interesting, because Nightman's father works for like a security detail in like a circus, like it not a circus but a like an amusement park, and he collects like weapons and stuff like that. Nightman's father is the one that actually saves the day, and he doesn't even know he's Nightman. At least the father knows that his son is Nightman, but he doesn't know his father's aware of it. So it's weird. But his father kind of like shoots this like plastic stuff on Tech Knight, and he tries to pull away, and it's like a super glue. So when he pulls it away, the whole armor collapses on itself. Like, he uses like his strength to pull away, and he just like the armor tears in half. But it's controlled remotely, so his father actually is the one that saves the day, and they capture the werewolf guy again. And he's like, "Can I help you, son? Can I help you fight, crime fight?" And he's like, "No, it's too dangerous for you, father." But it's kind of funny how the father saved the son, and he won't let him fight along with him. But
Yeah, he wants to help out.
the other interesting thing is, I didn't know how they had a thing in the back by Chris Ulm saying about, is there too many comics? And he's like saying, there's it's this exciting time in comics, but a lot of comic shops are not carrying our books, kind of thing. So he's like encouraging people to, let your guys know that you want to read these books, so they can pre-order them. He's like trying to encourage you to do that. That's also an interesting thing. And then I didn't know that Nightman was so far along. I always thought it was a series that came on later than The Strangers and Prime and Hardware, but it was released pretty early, because this is like issue 9, and Mantra, Prime were in 12 and 13, so it was roughly around the same time. And Firearm was already out. They just hadn't released Firearm number 0 that came with the tape yet. But you look at the writers that were here, and it was pretty good time to be reading comics, because you had Prototype with Tom Mason and Len Stravinsky, and you had Sludge with Steve Gerber, the creator of Howard the Duck and Man-Thing and all the Defenders books that he did. And you have Rune by Winsor Smith. You have The Solution by James Hundle. The Strangers by Steve Englehart. Warstrike by Don Danko, who I'm not too familiar with. Wraith by David Amerman. And Mike W. Barr. And Mike W. Barr was also doing Mantra, Straczynski and Jones on Prime. So there was a lot, James Robinson and on Firearm. There was a lot of big writers and artists here. The Presti on still working for DC and generating some awesome art is the Presti. He was doing Sludge. I mean, there's cool shit, man.
Yeah, definitely. And they definitely made a strong effort with it. And as you said, there was a number of creators that especially ones like Gerber that had worked in worked at Marvel in the 70s when pre-Jim Shooter, that when things were a little bit looser and it come in under Roy Thomas, where Roy was bringing a lot of different writers that were kind of close to him in age, and sort of letting them do their thing and be creative and not putting a lot of control over things. Then you had that succession of where almost everybody around Marvel was an editor in chief for a day. But a lot of those guys, I think by the 80s, were pretty disillusioned with, weren't really in the mood anymore to have somebody just over their head dictating every aspect of their stories. And some of them, like Gerber, ended up at Malibu for a little while, which was kind of neat. But
It's a
and
cool
it's
little universe there. And this was the time when George Perez was just about to come over and do Ultraverse too, so.
Yeah, I think I mentioned before that that they're pretty easy to find, most Ultraverse books, usually for pretty inexpensive too. So okay, so the last one that I read, and this is again a DC book, but do it a rotation. I don't know if I'll keep doing it or not, of indie and Marvel and DC, but so this week I read DC stuff. And I read Justice League of America issue 193. So this will have two parts to it actually, because there is a 16-page preview of All Star Squadron in this issue.
What number was that?
193.
That was one of your themes early on, is reading those 8-page preview things.
Yeah, I did do that.
You did that theme.
Yeah, and I don't think I had this one at the time. So this is actually part two of a story of the Justice League, the main story. It's the origin of Red Tornado, part two. And this one's called Secret of Genesis. This is the Jerry Conway written era of JLA, with art by George Perez and John Beattie, letters by the omnipresent Ben Oda, and colors by Carl Gafford. So it starts off with a shadowy figure crawling up the side of a building out of the sea, and to peer in through a window, and we see that it's actually Aquaman, and he's watching as Teal Morrow stands before Red Tornado, and we have a little bit of a recap of the previous issue via Morrow's words to the dormant Red Tornado, that he had created duplicates of Red Tornado and sent them after the JLA at the satellite. So it's kind of an editor's note lets us know that that was a bit of a recap, and but Morrow believes there's something about Tornado that makes him unique, and he is going to find out what that is, even if it means dismantling him. And that's all Aquaman needed to hear as he proclaims and declares, as he goes crashing through the window. And for some reason, it made me laugh unintentionally, because I remember people talking about how during the Detroit era of the Justice League, Aquaman would would try to train the new members by jumping out of nowhere and attacking them
A swimming pool.
and like punching them in the face and stuff. So this just kind of reminded me of that or something, because it's done across four panels where you see him. In each panel, he comes, for the first two, he's jumping and approaching the window, and the second two, he's crashing through, and each panel has a little bit of what he's saying. That's all I needed to hear.
He's an angry guy.
Yeah, but he does not accomplish too much, because as soon as he comes in, the next two panels, Morrow blasts him with this little wand thing that he's holding, and Aquaman goes flying out of the window and sinks down into the ocean, encased in some kind of crystal shell. And Morrow says, "Hey, handy thing, this power scepter. I picked it up while I was king of a living planet in a distant dimension. Now I use it to siphon power from my supercomputer back in the Rockies. It has its uses, such as," and then he waves his arm in a circle, and it seems to create a sort of portal of sorts that he takes himself and Red Tornado through, and they disappear. So we switch scenes to some sort of, it looks like it was a place where a battle had just occurred, because there's rubble everywhere, furniture's overturned and stuff, and Firestorm is lounging on a chair, saying, he's been everywhere around New York City and hasn't been able to catch a single glimpse of Red Tornado, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And there's a blonde-haired woman, so I believe maybe that's Sue Dibney. Or who might that be? Do you know?
A blonde woman?
Yeah, blonde woman. She's dressed in normal clothes. They don't really identify her.
Sue Dibney is
She doesn't have
black hair
blonde hair,
usually,
right? So,
yeah.
yeah. Unless I miss it, I'll try to keep an eye out here. But Flash shows up, and he said his report's pretty much the same. They can't find him, and this is sort of confirmation for them. Batman's there too, that Red Tornado that attacked them, the two of them were duplicates. And at this point, Superman shows up. He's been searching as well. He's been up and down the entire Eastern Seaboard with his telescopic vision, hasn't found anything as well. So Flash says, it looks like T.O. Morrow's back in town. And it's funny how there's just so many editors' references. There's another, they make references to other stories in the editor's notes. So it's Firestorm says, "The guy who created Reddy," that's his nickname for Red Tornado, "I thought you and the Atom tossed him in jail, Flash. Asterisk, and Super Team, family number 11. That's right, Reddy told us later that he'd battled Morrow in a mutated form. Asterisk, from World's Finest 268. This is Len Wein. That's the editor of this. So it's a little cute little sequence here where Flash says, "Maybe I better have a look in Central City Penitentiary." And he's playing with a Rubik's Cube, which he's solved by at that point. Tosses it up in the air. "I'll be right." Catches it back. Morrow's cell is empty, all right. "And while I was in Central City, I checked the prison records." So Firestorm is a little bit, he's pretty, still pretty new to the JLA at this point. He's like, "Wait a minute, you threw that up in the air, and before I could blink my eyes, you went to Central City and read those files. And Wonder Woman says, "Why do you think they call him the fastest man alive?" There's also a little baby. I don't know if you know who this baby is, or listeners can
Is it
clue
on
me
the
in.
is it on the cover?
No, but Wonder Woman is holding her, and then she puts her down at this point. But all this time so far, Wonder Woman's been holding this little black-haired baby. So I don't know. This is one of the things because I'm jumping in the middle of this here. But Hal Jordan shows up at this point anyways. It's not really important to the story, the baby. So, and he's got Aquaman with him. He's like, "Hate to interrupt, but our friend needs our help." So we go to the Rocky Mountains where Tio Maro has his base, and he's getting ready to analyze Red Tornado. He puts him in this computer thing, and it starts pulling the android apart and looking at his different sections of his body. And we get another editor's note where Tio Maro is thinking about how the computer originally designed the tornado that he's using by means of humanizitron, as told in JLA number 64 and again last issue. So something goes wrong, and there's a flash of light and darkness, and so then we head back to the satellite, JLA satellite, and as all the other leaguers watch through behind a protective screen, Wonder Woman is using a advanced medical skills from Paradise Island. She's got some kind of like a weapon that she's using to try to pierce the shell that Aquaman is trapped in. We have a little interesting sequence. Of course, Jerry Conway, he's the creator, co-creator of Firestorm, and he was the one that introduced him to the JLA and brought him in. And brought him in as kind of like a more young, inexperienced hero to have around all these really iconic characters. And so they're watching, and he says, "You can't tell me Aquaman is still alive in there. He must have been dead before Green Lantern found him." So Flash grabs him by the elbow and says, "Young man, I'd like a word with you." Firestorm, "Say what?" So he takes him out of the room away from the other heroes and says, "We've worked together, asterisk in the Flash 293. And I've seen you at your best and your worst. So I understand you're just an inexperienced kid, but that's no excuse for being stupid. Look, I saw a valued friend in dire need. Yeah, but he's probably isn't definitely. If there's even a chance that Aquaman survived that encasement, we have to do everything in our power to save him." "Sure, but no but, Firestorm. You'll learn soon enough that being a Justice Leaguer means giving everything you have for your friends. Until you learn that, I suggest you keep your mouth shut." So Flash really, Barry Allen really teaching a lesson there to the young Firestorm. And at that point, Martin Stein pops in and to reiterate and go seconds on it and tell him, "You better listen to what the Flash said." So fortunately, as the Flash said, the shell around Aquaman starts to, she finally cracks it open, and some steam erupts from inside. So that means that there's some body heat. So Wonder Woman grabs her lasso and activates the emergency sprinkler system so that the water will heal Aquaman's wounds, and that's enough to bring him back. And Aquaman's able to share with them that Maro, he confronted Maro, and that he had a scepter that that took him out, and that they need to find him because he's going to dismantle Red Tornado. So you think that this is going to be like the climax of the story, but the very next panel is the Justice League standing there at the rubble where Maro had passed out when we last saw him from the explosion, and Green Lantern picks him up in a ring generated fist, green fist. So they jump to that real fast, and just skipping ahead past the preview here, and so there's actually a further threat, more so than Maro. Superman's able to hear his heartbeat and tell that he's telling the truth, that he doesn't really know what happened to Red Tornado, that computer blew up. And then all of a sudden he's picked up by this huge tornado, like a real tornado, grabs him, and it has almost like a life to it. It has a rough shape where it forms a hand out of swirling winds, and it whips, whoosh, throws Tio Mauro at the cliffside and knocks him out. Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, he recognizes, says, "Wonder Woman, that thing, we've seen it before." Says, "You're right, Green Lantern, years ago, asterisk, JLA number 17, Triumph of the Tornado Tyrant." So they recognize it and have to fight it off, and they're having some difficulties where, Flash tries to run counter to its rotations, but the tornado shows that it has sentience because it speaks and tells Flash that he sees his plan ahead of time, and Superman gets really pissed off. He says, "By Rao, enough!" He's able to startle the tornado, but that's about all he's able to accomplish. The tornado swats him away and sends him flying straight through a mountain, basically taking out the middle of the mountain, and the top of it crashes into the bottom as Superman passes right through it. So at this point, it's wiped out four Justice Leaguers, and Firestorm is kind of hiding behind, taking cover behind Boulder, and he's about to try to launch his own attack when he hears a voice behind him. It says, "No, do not go. He will defeat you too. Only I can stop him now." And there's a little tornado behind them, a tiny tornado, a tornado baby. And it says, "I was once the Tornado Tyrant, but I changed. I became a force for good. I called myself the Tornado Champion. I am small only because I choose to be. Virtue is an attribute not of size, but of the soul." And so then there's this whole bit of exposition where this Tornado Champion explains that he began his existence on the planet Ran, where his evil nature was dominant. But he ran into Adam Strange, asterisk, Mystery of Space, Volume 161. He was almost destroyed on Ran, but that's where he learned that good is stronger than evil and good will always triumph. So watching Adam Strange, he decided to emulate his heroics. Then he, when he encountered the Justice League, he saw Adam Strange battle with them against Kanjar Rho in Mystery in Space number 75. And he knew that they were the heroes he wanted to model himself over. So he traveled to a world light years away, and he became the heroes of the Justice League, created his own version of the Justice League. But he had forgot about his evil nature, and his evil nature broke away from him, and he battled himself as in his Justice League incarnation. So he came to Earth, and the tyrant followed him, and the real JLA was able to defeat the Tornado Tyrant, succeed where he couldn't. And so he used what he learned from them to crush his evil self, what he thought was for forever. He went to Earth 2, and scientist Tio Mauro created an android to use against the Justice Society. And when it realized that the robot was going to be called the Red Tornado, the temptation was too strong to resist. He entered the android form and took control. That reveals the origin of the Red Tornado. That was a retelling of the events of JLA 17 and 64, and shows how Firestorm exclaims, "You mean all this time, Reddy was, is, always has been alive?" So this Tornado Champion is that essence that Tio Mauro is after that makes the Red Tornado different than just a regular robot. So Tornado Champion and Firestorm team up together to take out the evil tornado. And once the tyrant and the champion are gone, Firestorm finds the body of Red Tornado, and the champion has restored itself to the android body and the Firestorm kind of having learned a little bit of the lesson that Flash told him. It doesn't seem like once the champion is possessed with Tornado again, it doesn't have memories of what happened in its Tornado form. So Firestorm just keeps it to himself and says, let's head back and you could tell the others about what happened. They're probably coming around from being knocked out, and you'll be a sight for sore eyes. So yeah, it was a really cool story. Kind of bit of crazy origin for Red Tornado, but it was a fun story. I really liked that Flash moment that I went to detail on, and it was neat. Obviously, this is a classic era for the Justice League Satellite era when you have Jerry Conway and George Perez on the book, and just a really neat classic story. I'd like to read the first part of it, but I definitely could follow it and get into it pretty easily without.
That's what was cool about comics back then. It was easier to get back in, and then it also, like you said, had all those editor's notes, so you could say, "Oh yeah, that interests me. I want to go see what happened here," and then you'd go back issue diving, to see if you could find it. And things were a lot harder to find back then, but
Yeah, and it
it
let
was
me
like a
know too,
search.
it lets you know like what was original to this new story and what was drawn on past events, I won't go into as much detail on the 16-page preview of All Star Squadron, but
I have one other comment on
yeah, go
this.
ahead, sure.
I wonder if that the character, the female that you saw there was Kathy Sutton, which is kind of like the wife to Red Tornado, and they adopted a daughter, Treya, who might be the little girl that Wonder Woman's holding.
Yeah, I'd say you probably got to be right because that would
Because
explain.
this is Tio Maro and it's focused on Red Tornado, so those
Exactly.
two characters being in it would be, I bet you it's them.
You're probably right because the way that her demeanor in the beginning of the story shows a lot of concern, even though she doesn't have a lot of dialogue or anything, she seems quite interested and concerned with Tornado's fate, so that would make sense.
Yeah, she's a robot fucker just like Scarlet Witch, so.
Maybe there's a club or something that they belong to.
Robot Fuckers Anonymous.
Yeah. RFA, radio frequency alarm or something.
More reliable men.
Yeah, maybe they benefit from the feedback email that I got that one of our listeners was interested in sharing with me how to get an extra 3 inches.
Oh, you got one of those emails?
Yeah, I got
You're
some of them.
becoming famous then. They want you to add some size to your dick.
My Dick Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this has a number of different scenes that kind of seems to introduce various members and sort of put together an All-Star Squadron separate from the Justice League. So in the beginning, you have Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Flash, the Alan Scott and Jay Garrick versions, and they're just like picnicking when Solomon Grundy shows up to screw with them. He just kind of rises up out of the lake that they're picnicking by. It's interesting because Alan Scott and Jay Garrick definitely have like a 40s attitude, like. Even though Wonder Woman is super powerful, like they are still like can't believe that Solomon Grundy would hit a woman, and they still are kind of like overprotective of her, even though she's probably stronger than them. So Grundy though actually ends up taking them out. Then we have there's another sequence where Wesley Dodds, the Sandman, Starman, and Johnny Thunder go to fight with Sky Pirate. And Sky Pirate actually is able to take them out. And then we go to Salem, Massachusetts, where the Tower of Stone, within it is Inza and Dr. Fate. And he's looking into the Orb of Nabu at his villain, Wotan, his nemesis Wotan. And Wotan appears, and there's a battle, and the Spectre shows up, and Wotan's able to overcome Spectre and Dr. Fate. Then we have Superman and Batman and Robin. They are greeting some troops. So this is be like on Earth 2. Professor Zodiac, this guy Professor Zodiac, shows up on this like plane with all these like with all the Zodiac symbols all over it and stuff. Real like Golden Age seeming villain. Oh, and there must be something to the connection between the maybe this is where they were drawn for that Batman, but Batman says, look, or Robin says, look, Batman, he's loony. He's just sprinkling a few drops of water our way. And Batman says, careful, chum. It might be some kind of liquid that explodes on contact.
A lot of chums now that I see that, because I was just
Now you start
reading Batman
seeing it.
66 that he was saying chum. I wonder if that was in the TV show too.
I think Daryl said it was, yeah. So maybe the different authors picked up on that from the TV show and wanted to be consistent with it or something. But actually, this liquid is an elixir of youth, and it turns Batman into a kid and the Robin to an even younger kid. So it's left to Superman to try to fight them, but Zodiac has a has some kryptonite necklace that he uses. Or I think he turns his Philosopher's Stone into kryptonite. So at the nation's capital, we check in with Hawkman, Dr. Midnight, and Atom Smasher. And the monster, I think he says his name is. He's in a blue suit with a cape. He appears from behind the head of the Lincoln Memorial, and shoots a ray at them. As they're fighting them, this is the one where they don't get overcome. And as this guy's passing out, he turns into an older man. And Adam Smash is like kind of a wimpy old guy too. But as the old guy's passing out, he says Degaton. So Adam Smash just says, "What the heck is a Degaton?" I like how there's an editor's note here, but it's just to tell us how to say that it rhymes with megaton. So actually, I was saying it wrong, Degaton. Good thing they had that. So the way it closes is that the president, FDR, he's got a decoded message that the Japanese is delivered to the Secretary of State tomorrow, or it's Truman rather, actually Harry Truman, and talks about how he's gonna. I hope to have the powerful Justice Society with their formidable powers standing by, forming some sort of all-star squadron to help out in the present emergency. But he realizes that Japan is going to declare war on this decoded message, so. That the last panel is As the newspaper, the Washington Globe, National Rail Strike begins today. In these first moments of Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a date destined to live in infamy. And that was by Roy Thomas and Rich Buckler, writer, penciler, co-creators, with embellishments by Jeremiah Ordway, and letters by John Costanza, and colors by Carl Gafford. So that's your lead-in, your 16 preview, can't talk anymore. That's your lead into the Justice, or the rather, that's your lead into All-Star Squadron number one.
Did you like it? Do you want to check out All-Star Squadron, or was it...
You know, I might give it a shot. I don't know if it's a title that's going to last, but... yeah, I liked it. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I feel like I already know, you know, I like the All-Star Squadron. I'm predisposed to kind of liking that kind of a comic. I like the Justice Society and like the and the fighting in the 40s and stuff during the World War II era and stuff. So I thought it was a pretty decent preview. I still think that the best of all the 16-page previews is the one for New Teen Titans as far as grabbing you and one making you want to read the comic.
Yeah.
I think that one's excellent, but it was pretty good. I'd say it's one of the better ones, probably.
That Night Force was pretty good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that one's a good one. So I would say it's kind of parallel with it's up there with Night Force. I mean, it's one of the better ones, I think. So.
Alrighty, we have questions. Do you want to talk some questions real quick?
Sure.
All right.
I didn't see these, so.
All right. These are going to... From Brian Regate, he says, craziest DC Silver or Bronze Age concepts?
You'll probably be better at these than I am.
Eraserhead. That guy was a pretty crazy Batman villain.
Oh, yeah. That's a callback to when Donnie was on.
Yeah, that was Eraserhead. So he was crazy. I've always thought Brother Power the Geek, while I like him, he's pretty out there. And it was like a pro-hippie look at something. And it only lasted two issues, but it was pretty interesting. He's pretty out there. There's a lot of villains and stuff in the 70s that you got to kind of take with a grain of salt, but they're entertaining if you just appreciate them for what they are. And a lot of the villains that were goofy, they've changed or retrofitted so they're not as goofy anymore. Mm-hmm. Like Dr. Light, they made him really dark. Even in the current incarnation, he's more serious than he was when he was kind of that Teen Titans villain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, those are some good ones.
He mentioned Snapper Carr. I never thought Snapper Carr was goofy, though. And, I mean, he was goofy when they gave him powers, and he could snap his fingers. He became Spanner's Galaxy or one of those books where... I didn't think he was goofy because he was kind of like the Rick Jones of the DC universe, I thought. You know, like, he's not powered, and before he got powers, he was their, like, sidekick that was there. But, he mentions the Super Sons, and I don't think I've ever read it, even though it's pretty powerful. I mean, it's pretty well-known, World's Finest type stories where Superman and Batman had sons and they had adventures and stuff. I never read that, to tell you the truth. I've heard a lot about it. I've heard a lot of podcasters talk about it.
Yeah. I love a lot of the things that he did, but in the Bronze Age, like Jack Kirby's contributions, some of the new characters he came up with were pretty wild to be.
Well, it was the Forever People. Their whole concept was like hippies in space, man.
Mm-hmm.
And they never really had adventures where they explored any of their powers too much. Do you know what I mean? They were kind of just there in an adventure.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, the Bat, I mean, the Batman was a pretty crazy book in the Silver Age. Like you
Or
like
Superman. They had all the different types of kryptonite that were goofy, and they would give him different. Like, some would make him go insane, some would make him turn older, some would make him get a lion's head. I mean, it's just
Yeah.
jacked up stuff.
How they all had, you know, most everybody knows like Mitch Pitalik, but for a little while there, it was like all the heroes had to have their own imp.
Oh, yeah, Batmite.
Bat, you had Batmite, I think, and that's the second one most people know, but I think there was even ones that some of the other heroes had too.
I forget what the Legion of Super Pet thing was, but they had all like Streaky the cat and Comet the horse and all of the different crypto, you know what I mean? There was others. That was kind of weird.
Oh yeah, you had Quisp
Yeah.
was Aquaman's.
Or that little starfish on Green Lantern's shoulder.
Yeah.
That was Izzy, I think his name was Izzy. I don't remember.
Yeah, Quisp was a weird little character. Yeah, they would pick a thing and then they would, if it worked, they would give it to all the heroes, like you said, the different pets and stuff. The horse was Supergirl's, right?
Yeah, Comet.
Yeah.
I had a chance to buy that first appearance, and I regret that I didn't because it's a book that I could have got for a good price, and it just keeps going up.
They love
I'll think of some
horses.
others as we go along. Chuck from Star Joe says, "What are some of your favorite stories from DC's Brave and the Bold?"
Like as the Batman team up one?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought
You
I
just
almost
did the
unplugged my laptop.
Commandy one.
Yeah, that was cool.
I like when he teamed up with Mr. Miracle, 'cause I liked Mr. Miracle. Even when Superman teamed up with Mr. Miracle, I liked it.
Yeah, I think did I talk about one of those? Maybe it was the Superman one. I feel
Yeah,
like I
I
talked
think it was
about one of
DC
those.
Comics Presents, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked them all, especially the ones that he just had like weird characters like Batman, Sergeant Rock. Like how does that team up happen? Or there were some interesting ones. I
Yeah,
liked when
especially because Bob Haney was on the book as the writer for a while there. He was always good for some crazy ideas.
they're good done in one.
I remember a few. I don't know about my favorite because I mean, there's a lot of them that I haven't read. So I don't know about my favorite necessarily, but I know there was one with Wonder Woman where the two of them teamed up against a character named Deja Vu. He was like a French guy. He had some kind of like political reasons for wanting to disrupt this UN meeting or something like that. There was like this political meeting that he had protests against, but he would make you. It was weird because he was called Deja Vu, but his powers were basically the same as the Scarecrow's. Since he wouldn't really make he would make you relive things, but they were your fears. So it's kind of like didn't quite click with his name. So he was kind of lame, and that was his only appearance. No, I don't think any other comics ever used him again. And then there was a issue where it was ostensibly a team up with Ra's al Ghul. I'm trying to think what the plot of that was, but there was some kind of situation where Batman was forced to basically work with Ra's al Ghul. So they would do fun stuff like that.
159. It was like
Sounds about
Batman
right,
and
yeah.
Ra's al Ghul, Master of Assassin.
Yeah, I think that was probably it. That sounds about the right issue number. But they would, yeah, they would like to do that so that you would look at the, you'd look at the issue and see what, like they try to surprise you with who they were teaming up with so that you would grab it, you want to buy it.
Batman Hawk and Dove. I had a Batman Huntress I liked a lot. Batman Green Arrow I always liked. Batman and the Creeper was always fun. Batman and the Metal Men. Adam Strange was always cool because Batman would always end up on Ran for some reason. Batman and the Joker.
Yeah, when they would try to take with Adam Strange, they'd take Batman out of his normal habitat, you know. So it's interesting when Batman ends up in outer space.
Batman and Karate Kid, that was a good issue. And then I've always liked when he teamed up with like Metamorpho, and Black Lightning before they were the Outsiders.
With familiarity with the characters, they
Ragman was always cool because he was kind of like a Batman-esque villain who got powers from all the spirits that are kept in his rags.
yeah, he's a kind of a weird one.
Batman Red Tornado. There's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, next question is from Ryan. Has there been a comic or comic book series from the past that you didn't read or even know much about when it came out, but have read it in recent years that made you go, "Where had you been all my life?"
Where have you been all my life? Jeez, yeah, probably.
A lot of the DC for you, right? Because you didn't even care about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like New Teen Titans. I mean, I didn't grow up with it because I didn't read DC, and now it's probably my one of my top five. All of Kirby's DC 70s stuff. I mean, I didn't read the Fourth World till we covered it in the show.
Yeah, Ryan, Kirby-esque characters, like somebody who draws Kirby Transformers and G.I. Joe. That's awesome. Good answer,
Is he not liking
Chris.
the Scioli?
No, he's not. Good answer, Chris. I like that answer. I pretty much bought all the comics, so I never like discovered anything late except for like the indie stuff, like John Sable and Maze Agency and the thing you just read, I forget what it was. God, what was that title? It was from Innovation.
Oh, Hero Alliance.
Hero Alliance. Yeah, stuff like that I discovered really late and really enjoyed it. I also discovered like Dinosaurs for Hire late, The Protectors really late. But I went back and bought it all, so
Would you say, I know you've said that you didn't follow X-Men as closely back in the day
I
as
still
some
don't.
stuff, but you didn't really. Yeah, that's kind
I
of
have a
that's what I was
hard, I have
wondering.
a I don't know what it is. It's I enjoy it, but I enjoy what I read and I enjoy what I read lately. I just don't have an emotional attachment. I don't It's good stuff. I have nothing against it. I just don't get too into it. I don't know what it is. Like recently, I've been making cutbacks, and I've been making cutbacks to Marvel just because not because the stuff isn't good and not because I don't enjoy it. It's mostly because I let it stack up. And I kind of tell myself, well, if I'm letting them stack up and I do catch up, I can find these issues. I can find them. I can finish the story. So, it's easy to do, but
In this day and age, you
I
know.
think a lot of Marvel team up I discovered really late and really enjoyed it. Man, I can't think of any of the Marvel or DC stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of stuff with DC, like you said, because even with not, it's not as recent for me as New Teen Titans, but probably my favorite comic character, Wally West, is someone who I didn't start reading until my early 20s. I didn't grow up with him. My other really favorite Spider-Man, and one that I did grow up with, but I don't have a lot of. So yeah, for me, like I don't have a lot of Marvel stuff. A lot of the Marvel stuff I like is based on stuff that I liked growing up.
Early Fantastic Four, I guess I could say, because I came in the Fantastic Four like reading off the spinner rack during the John Byrne years. Do you know what I mean? But I went back and I picked up a lot of the Kirby stuff, and I was like blown away. Like it was awesome, and like the Inhuman stuff. And I was the thing about Marvel back in that time frame is, man, they just introduced so much, like that. Introduced so much that could hold their own book, but they were introduced in other titles. Like every issue, you'd see something like Silver Surfer, Galactus, the Inhumans, like something big. Impossible Man, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, to sort of fit the category of something that really, as you said, where have you been all my life? Something that really just clicks with me in a way that is really strong and prominent. It's probably the stuff I've already said is Flash, New Teen Titans, and then, I mean, I think I became aware of Kirby's early Marvel stuff, not so much as a kid, but earlier than I became aware of his stuff at DC and the stuff that really I love a lot of the characters he created at Marvel, but as far as his own drawn, written style, the Fourth World, which we've covered on here, and then what I've read outside of the podcast of with OMAC and Commandy and the Demon and stuff, like those are all become really strong favorites for me. I
Yeah.
love Commandy.
Like I think that is a good example, even for me. I just have to go back many years because I didn't really like where I became like a Kirby fanatic was my college years, so it'd have to be early 90s. Do you know what I mean? And that stuff's from the 70s, and I'm talking about like the DC stuff. I went on this binge where I try to find every demon, every new gods, every, all that fourth world stuff. Absolutely fell in love with it. Like, I was like, where, wh and that really was like, where have you been all my life? Why did I miss this? Because my Mr. Miracle was not Kirby. Like, I didn't know where he had come from. I kind of caught on to the Mr. Miracle like towards the tail end when it wasn't Kirby. Like when the things were like 40-cent comics and stuff, and I was like, Mr. Miracle, god damn, his costume's awesome and stuff. Went back and just was blown away by it. Like, just this stuff is awesome. And then I discovered OMAC really late, and that's even my OMACtivate is my thing. I just love OMAC. So yeah, Kirby, anything Kirby, I've gone back to.
Commandy's one of the like one of those comics that actually really like got to me emotionally and really upset me because of I don't know if you remember like the sequence of issue where he had that giant the I don't know if it's a grasshopper or exactly what it is, but insect, the click clack, the bug that he rides on its back and stuff, and it's like it becomes his pet basically, like it's his buddy and his pet, and he is forced to race Click Clack in those events, and Click Clack ends up getting so hurt and injured in the events and in the like that's kind of like a battle to the death race, and Click Clack gets so hurt that at even though Commandy wins, they have to put Click Clack out of his misery and Commandy insists on doing it himself and like takes a gun and shoots Click Clack.
It's kind of like the old Yeller thing.
Yeah, and I was like, before that, there's this part where like even though he's in captivity, Commandy's super excited that he's still going to be able to work with Click Clack. He's first introduced as this monster that everyone's afraid of, and Commandy connects with him. And he's like super excited that even though he's in captivity, he's still going to be able to work, be with Click Clack. So they have this bond between them. And it just reminded me of like a bond between like, you know, like me and my dog or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's.
So
it's,
I was just like,
it's a tough bond.
It tore me up. It tore me up when Click Clack died. So
I really want to revisit the Commandy. That's one thing I read issue wise, but now that I have the omnibuses, I just want to dig into that stuff again at some point.
Yeah, it's crazy how it's more heart wrenching than you would expect. That's not the only death that kind of. It's a pretty brutal world that he created for Commandy. So
a lot of the things that blow me away are based on Kirby. Like I'll go back and I'll see some of his monster books or whatever, and I'm even going into the Golden Age and his art style in the Golden Age. I even own a few Golden Age books from him, but his art style is very, very different, and it's different from the style that I liked in the 70s, but I am really growing to appreciate him all every period. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. He's my hero. So.
Yeah. I one story I like about him is from the foreword to the Demon hardcover where I think it's Evanier that's talking about how, you know, DC wanted Supernatural. They felt like Supernatural characters were popular, so they wanted him to come up with some kind of a demon character, and so that he just called it the Demon. But they went out to eat, and Mark Evanier with Jack Kirby and his family and I think another assistant, and they were all just sitting there talking and stuff like that, and he noticed that Kirby kind of after he ordered his dinner just kind of drifted off and was quiet and wasn't really engaging with the rest of the people at the table. And then when his food was delivered, he started talking, and he told them laid out the whole concept of Etrigan and Jason Blood and how they were like the same. You know, they were connected and all that. He had like brainstormed all of that in the time between ordering his food and it being delivered. And he just like laid it out and told them the story, and they all just like sat and listened to his idea that he came up with. So, yeah, just definitely a fascinating mind.
Yeah, he was way. His imagination, it just blows me away.
Yeah.
And I just love Tom Scholey because he loves Jack Kirby. And if you go to any of his panels, you just hearing him talk about Jack Kirby is just, oh, man. I mean, I feel a bond. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love Jack Kirby. I want to read that book. I got the book Hand of Fire. I got to get into it. Got to start reading one before bed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll take that on the plane. I don't know. And by the way, I'll be at Baltimore Comic Con if anybody wants to say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, questions. Back to questions.
Yeah, is there any more?
Alan says cat meow. I guess he wants you to meow. I don't know.
He's right here. I don't know if I can get him to talk, though. Hey, Dusty. Sleepyhead. He's full. He was meowing up a freaking storm this morning, though. At 7:30, wanted me to get up and feed him. Right now, he's like, are you alive? Hey.
Next next comment is 80s song of the morning. Mine is Abracadabra by the Steve Miller Band.
Of the morning?
Yeah, because you mentioned Abracadabra, and I sang Abra, Abracadabra. I want to reach out and grab you.
When did that Stevie Nicks song come out that I was singing? I don't know if that was 70s or 80s.
What was the song again?
It's the I think it's called
The One Winged Dove?
17 or something, Edge of 17. When did that come
Edge
out?
of 17.
Yeah, when did this come out? 1981.
There you go. So we have Songs of the Morning. That's pretty cool. And we didn't even look at the question before.
We were set already.
Yeah. What is the silliest character who you love anyway? Brother Power the Geek. I like that character. I'm growing to love Howard the Duck, but I have a lot of stuff to read from that because I never read Howard the Duck or Man-Thing. I read Steve Gerber's Defenders, and now I want to go back and that's one writer I want to go back and revisit. How
Yeah, I
about
would like
you?
to read more. I would like to read more of his stuff too. Man, I'm trying to. What are some silly characters that I like? What are some silly characters to begin with? Trying to think if there's any that go way back to back in the day with Marvel.
Any X mutants that were just bizarre? I think Morrison created a lot of like bird head or beak or whatever that
Yeah, that's true. That's not so
one.
much back in the day, but he did make
But
a
it
lot
is our
of.
10-year rule, I think.
Oh, he definitely created a lot of mutants that were visually mutated. I appreciate that. I like that, because it really wouldn't, if mutants existed, you really wouldn't have them all come out like looking like normal humans that just happen to have
Yeah.
powers.
I think Grant Morrison is the one that got me back into the X-Men. Because I wasn't buying it until that title came out.
That's interesting. I think because for a lot of people, I think that turned them off. There's a lot of people like it though, I think. I don't know. Nothing's coming immediately to mind. If I think of one, I'll mention it.
All right. That was from Vicious Smith or Ken Jr.
I
So,
mean, like really serious characters, okay? All my characters are cool.
yeah, he doesn't like any talking raccoons or trees.
I feel like some of the Flash rogues are pretty goofy, pretty silly, but
I think they were back in the day.
yeah,
I
they're
think you take them
changing them a
seriously
bit more,
now.
yeah.
They're more like a family unit with weird
That's true.
bonds. All right. That now we can jump to Buck Rogers. Do, 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 do,
Yes.
do, do. What was this episode called? Missing Twiggy or
Twiggy is missing.
Twiggy?
He's missing. That's not good. Don't want Buck Rogers without Twiggy.
Right.
So.
Had three sexy women in this episode that had skirts. Only one of them talked, but they had like mini skirts that were just right below the crotch area. Just like if you went about 3 millimeters up, you would see crotch.
Yeah, they like to cut them high in the 31st century. But yeah, I picked up that the three women, they were called the Omni Guard. They only
Yeah.
mentioned that a couple times, but the speaking role, the main woman, her character's name was Stella Breed, but she's played by an actress called. It was kind of interesting because her name is Eddie, at the time. Was Eddie Benton, or she went by Eddie Benton, but
Oh, was
not.
it real? She was she related to Bobby Benton or Barbie Benton? I forget what her name is.
I don't think so.
Barbara Benton.
Yeah, no, but not long after this, she actually changed her stage name to Anne Marie Martin. So I don't know what inspired that.
Maybe marriage? I don't I think we're gonna lose the connection again. Hello?
Jeez.
Yeah, I
What
called
the
you
hell?
three times and it just said it couldn't reach you. And then I was looking for you on my contacts list and I couldn't find you. I was like, what the hell
What? Maybe I blinked out of existence for a minute there. I didn't feel any interruption. That was weird. Man,
God, I'm gonna actually have to edit this
internet's terrible
episode.
today. Well, I guess it's. I wonder. I have Time Warner, and earlier this week they had a whole nationwide outage or something one morning. I couldn't access the internet in the morning before work, and then I got home, it was fixed. But yeah, I don't know what the hell was going on there. But
We were talking about the actress before we got disconnected.
yeah, she changed her name to Amory Martin, and she married Michael Crichton in 1987, the guy that did Jurassic Park and whatnot. She stopped acting, and they actually co-wrote the screenplay to the movie Twister together.
Oh, good. That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, but they divorced in 2003, and I guess nowadays she rides horses competitively.
Ah.
But one interesting fact about her, she did some other TV, like TJ Hooker, and she was in Prom Night, the horror movie that starred Jamie Lee Curtis.
Was she the teacher in Prom Night?
I don't know
Or
what her
she was
role
one of the
was. I think she's
students.
probably one of
She's
the
probably
students
younger,
because of the
yeah.
age. Yeah,
Yeah. She just looked familiar.
and she was in a she was in H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come, a low budget science fiction film that capitalized on the popularity of Buck Rogers. She was made up to resemble Wilma Deering in that movie, apparently. And then she also auditioned unsuccessfully for the role of Princess Leia. So there's some trivia
Interesting.
for you. Yeah, some
Yeah.
trivia for you about her.
But
But yeah,
she's a
she's.
telekinetic. She has powers, but and I guess she's even more powerful if she teams up with the Omni Guard, who those other two never say a word.
Yeah, they must not have been able to afford in the budget to have two more speaking roles. Because, yeah, they don't say anything, but they just are there to kind of create a little more intimidating presence, I guess. But, yeah, they're working for this guy named Belzac, who,
That guy's an asshole. Like he
he's
likes
not a
to
nice guy.
he mines this benzium or whatever it's called. What does it say what it's called?
I wrote Blasium.
Blasium. And it's an explosive device. And he mines it out. This is like an asteroid floating in space and they're kind of like have an office in there and they mine it. And he has all these people that he like puts to slavery and he threatens them. Either by doing something with their families, or he just has the this guard hurt them if they try to go against them. So, and he treat the conditions are not very favorable. In other words, he works them to death. It's a dangerous type situation to mine this stuff, even though it's kind of like benign unless you have energy, right? To make the thing explode.
Yeah, it requires quite a bit of energy, apparently, to.
And then there's this side plot which keeps Colonel Deering in space, but it's interesting. And I'm not sure I understood it totally because it's almost like they wanted this asteroid of ice to land in there so they would have water. But if it didn't have the right entry, it would destroy most of the Earth. Is that what you got out of it?
That is, yeah. I did find that it was a little bit confusing in the episode, but apparently what it's like, it's kind of like an iceberg in outer space that's full of frozen oxygen, and they want it for the to replenish the oxygen in Earth's atmosphere. But yeah, they needed to enter the atmosphere in a certain way, or it might explode if not done properly or something.
So you have this process that's going on, and it keeps Colonel Deering and some of the other crew busy, as well as what's his name, the scientist guy? I forget.
Dr. Hewer?
Dr. Ewer, yeah. He's not concentrating on what's happening with Buck. He's concentrating on whether these cities on Earth are going to be destroyed. He can't
Right.
focus on this. He needs the oxygen. He needs that to survive. And he's worried more about the trajectory. Meanwhile, this guy says these miners are revolting. They're not doing their work that well. If I can get this thing this Twiggy, it has to be the specific version. They can't just take any other robot because Buck has trained that robot to actually be lazy, like Buck says later. He's trained him to be lazy and have an attitude, but they don't know that, right? They think he's going to
Right.
be a hard worker. So they want to steal him and then like take him apart and then reprogram and make an army of these things so they can mine that mineral out of the asteroid and use them for the more dangerous stuff and then take some of the people out.
Yeah.
So they say go capture him. So he sends those three women to Earth, and they try to go about it in the approach that, oh, we'll give you all this money for Twiggy. He's just a robot. It shouldn't be a big deal. And Buck's like, you can't give me enough money. He's my
Yeah.
family. He's my best friend. You can't give me any money. And she just can't understand it. She's like, what do you mean? He's a robot. He's got no personality. He's not family. He doesn't have a heart. And
Yeah. It's like the second time now that somebody's made the assumption that it's just a robot and they don't realize that they're actually buddies.
But she tricks him. She basically says, we'll take him to the lab at this time and we will get the blueprint for Twiggy, and Buck thinks it's harmless. That's fair. You could steal his blueprint. Twiggy will probably get a kick out of it, and then be on your way. But then they use their powers, their telekinetic powers, and they knock him out and steal Twiggy.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty cool scene because they do like a mid they program a ship to take Twiggy to fly him back to that asteroid. And Buck manages to get away and he's like, oh, this ship's launched. I got to go after Twiggy. And then he basically tells Twiggy, launch yourself into space. Get out of there. They're controlling
Yeah.
that
Yeah, I liked it because it took a little bit of an unexpected turn. You thought maybe instead of just having Twiggy get captured, then him have to go rescue him, I didn't expect them to just be just to get Twiggy back right away. You know, they added an extra it added an extra wrinkle to the plot.
And it made their relationship even stronger, like because they added that extra scene to the plot, he saved Twiggy. Twiggy went back to Earth and then said, what are we gonna do now? Back to the drawing board. Well, let's capture Buck.
Yeah, let's capture Buck
And then we'll
instead.
use him to ransom him for Twiggy. And then Ewer is like, we this breaks our policy. We don't conform to terrorist action. I can't send Twiggy over there for a buck, which is kind of weird because it's just a robot, but he's like,
Right.
I can't do that. Plus his mind is on that damn iceberg crashing into Earth.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't have time for this shit. And Twiggy's there and he's basically beady beady beep. You're like, what's going on? I'm gonna lose my best friend. My best friend's gonna die because of me. So Twiggy's like, fuck that. I'm gonna get in my starfighter and go after Buck.
And he puts on a helmet too,
Yeah.
like Buck and Wilma normally wear. He's got the old helmet on and everything.
He
It's
has
pretty
such
funny.
good one-liners. You just gotta love him, because he gets them all from Buck. He's like a little buck, is what it is.
Yeah, he picks up all the 20th century sayings
Yeah.
and
And he doesn't even need a stuntman like Buck does. He doesn't even take the stairs. He's like, Buck, just pick me up.
Yeah. Yeah, so Twiki goes off to rescue Buck. And there's kind of an interesting sequence where Balzac, he decides that I keep wanting to say Balzac. Balzac decides.
I'll title that episode Ball Sack.
Yeah, there you go.
I
Mining. Balzac Mining Operation. Balzac Mining Company.
Ball sack mining.
Yeah, he so that's that he kind of it's almost like he wants to recruit Buck or something. Like he unhandcuffs him and gives him a tour, and that's where we kind of had the whole explanation of Blasium, and they're basically big white styrofoam blocks, but that's how we know that that's how they tell you the things we need to know for later that it explodes and you got to use a lot of energy and poor Twiki though he ends up just getting captured again. He's not too successful in his rescue operation as they reveal to Buck at the end of the tour that they have Twiki and so now the two of them are trapped together.
And at this point, Buck has already planted some stuff into Stella and into thinking that, this guy's evil. He's blackmailing you to work for him. And
Yeah, because he has access to her son,
yeah, and
and he'll
he's
hurt her hun.
threatened to kill her son, and he's already killed her husband. So you know the backstory. So Buck essentially convinces her later on. Well, actually, Twiggy gets captured, and then what is it? The Omni Guard, they call him. The Omni Guard comes in over this huge acid bath, which I think they used to create the mineral. He's gonna die, and they're using their powers to kind of like drop him in. But she's taking a long time; like she's real reluctant to do it. Like she could have just dropped his ass in there, but she doesn't do it. And she turns on him, and basically they rescue him, and then they get a Twiggy, and they escape, and they actually fight through this sonic barrier, which Buck's like, I can't hear, I can't hear, and Twiggy's like, pick me up, Buck, pick me up, and they picks him up and destroys the sonic weapon, and they escape, and he uses that chemical to put that asteroid back on track, essentially.
Yeah, the force field thing is funny. When Stella decides to let Buck go and not drop him to acid pick a pit, we've Buck and Twiggy had already tried to get through this force field, and there's no visual in the episode. Like we're just dependent on the characters pretending. And so it's funny when they get Stella to leave with them that they get to the point where the force field's supposed to be, and she just kind of waves her hand in a quick little circle and then they keep walking. So that's like her just like her brief using her abilities to dispel the force field, but there's no actual visual to any of this. It's all just make believe, and it's just the actors pretending, and we just go along with it. But so the two plots come together, and that Buck's able to use the Blasium to knock the space berg back into the atmosphere and give them the oxygen and stuff like that. And kind of a nice little when they're doing the sequence, Twiggy tells his buddy, play it as it lays, Buck. Another one of his little colloquialisms. And then I wrote in my notes that for the ending that Twiki is a hero and really loves Buck. Because he doesn't want to think of himself as a hero. And so Buck recounts from all the crazy stuff that happened throughout the episode that he was responsible for. And that he's ultimately a hero.
Just through summary, they say we've captured the villain, your son is free now, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
They resolve all that through a 2-minute conversation. All
Yeah.
that stuff's been resolved. We've arrested this guy and the took over the mine, I guess. And the Erin Grey really didn't have any. Did she? Was she? Did they have a final scene with her in there at the end? I didn't think she was in it anymore.
I thought that there was a little bit of her flying around and just
Oh, in
like,
space, but I
yeah,
mean,
in
with Locke,
space.
I don't think they had any scenes together, did they?
I don't think she was at the end there where she
I think it was Twiggy, the Stella, and you were, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there really was one where.
That was weird. 'Cause usually she comes just so she can laugh with Buck. Like, he'll make some remarks and she goes, "Ee!"
Yeah. So.
All right, well, that takes us to the end of this episode and the last episode of You as a Single Man.
Yeah. Yep, next time on Retrocast, I'll be a married man. It'll be a new era for the show.
Yes.
I can't talk about the way that Erin Grey looks in her jumpsuit anymore.
Yeah, you can't.
No, not much will change, really. Be pretty similar.
Even though you're not married, you kind of are, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't technically been single for years, and
Yeah.
like in the dating sense or anything. And we already live together, so.
Yep.
But it'll be really nice to make it official.
Yes.
So,
Congratulations, my friend.
thanks, buddy.
And have a good wedding next weekend. I will think of you as I'm looking through comic books and drinking and chatting with comics.
Yeah. It'll be cool. We'll both have fun stuff going
I'll send you a little wedding video so you can play.
on. Nice. Yeah, that'll be nice.
Keith is only talking about being there Saturday, so I don't even know if that'll pan out based on this weekend, but we'll see.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yep. All right. Well, have a good one. I will talk to you soon and enjoy your time.
Yeah, should we do our info real quick
Oh
or
yeah.
geekbrunchpodcast.com for the episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch. Email to MythMakingETC@gmail.com. Wait, did I just mix up Twitter and email? No, I didn't. See, because mine's all the same, so I don't know what the hell I'm doing. In mike@comicbooknoise.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. We've gotten some nice ones that have mentioned the show in particular. But you can just find the show if you're not already listening to it that way on iTunes under Geek Brunch Podcast with the regular Geek Brunch show that's been going strong for, what, 8 years? 7 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
It's been a long time. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
2006? I don't know. It's been a long time.
One thing that's cool about the Geek Brunch website is that you can select the year.
Yeah.
Like there's like a drop down, you can just go to the oldest and it takes you right there. Because I've gone back and listened to some of the episodes. It started out as just you and Heath
Heath.
Holland.
Yeah.
So the show's changed a lot over the years, just like DC Noise has.
Yes,
You
it's
know?
changed a lot. It used to be a serious show.
Mike is the constant. Mike is the constant amongst the storm.
Yeah. All
But
right. Oh yeah, thank you for leaving all the feedback on the Facebook page, you know, replying to the episodes and stuff.
yeah,
That's always fun to read.
thanks to David Levine for his
Yeah.
comments on the last episode. I know that he made some specific responses to things we talked about, and that's definitely appreciated. So,
And he also mentioned that Hawkeye lost his hearing in the final issue of the 4-issue Hawkeye Limited series from 1983.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that
Yeah.
was cool to see that. That was cool.
I wonder if that's the first one, because I have that issue, but I don't. I have the 4-issue first Hawkeye series, but he's had like a couple of them. I guess it is because it's 1983. It would
Yeah,
have to be.
the timing of it must have been the very first one, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I had to go back and read that now that I'm hearing lo I have a more intimate thing with hearing loss, so let's see what it's like.
yeah, you can see if you can identify with it in a new way.
I have a hearing aid now, but it really doesn't add a lot yet. And I don't know why, because it's supposed to amplify. It amplifies sound, that's for sure. It just doesn't amplify sound that I can understand, like voice. And I don't know why. I do know that my hearing aid isn't natural hearing loss. Like, that natural hearing loss is what hearing aids are designed for. And my hearing loss is inverted from natural hearing loss. So it was a 50-50 shot, but I think it helps a little bit, but it's hard to tell. It's interesting. I'll tell you that. When I
Yeah.
scratched my head, I could hear it a thousandfold.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And I could hear birds and stuff chirp from like a mile. It's like a bionic ear, but if you were to talk to me, I'm like, what?
weird. Almost seems like the settings need to be adjusted or something.
Yeah, it's program. It's pro. They program it low, and it's supposed to like boost stuff weekly, but you can't. I've played with some settings, and man, it really makes things weird. Like you can put more voice in there, but then you hear like a delay and an echo from the other ear, and it's just weird. It seems to work better, at least for me and my condition, under if more people are talking than in absolute quiet. In quiet, it seems to be worse, which is weird. I thought it would be the opposite.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'll go see if I
Well,
can
hopefully
turn
it'll
into
work out.
Hawkeye.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just the first step.
Sonic Arrow. Maybe I gotta just learn to do archery and
Yeah, maybe
go
this
help
is.
Brown Arrow.
Yeah, exactly. You could be the red arrow to his green arrow.
That's right.
But you'll be like, I don't know, I guess whatever color you want to be.
Yeah. All
All
right.
right. Well, have a good week.
I'll probably release this one tonight just so I have it
Whoa.
ready, and
'Cause it's
because
gonna
it's
take
going
you
to be
all
a
afternoon
short week.
to
No, it's not a lot of editing. It's a lot
Just
of
gotta
cut and
combine
pasting,
it, yeah.
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 And then I maybe trimming some of the ending in, because sometimes I think I was talking and you were just gone. I was like, why is Chris not saying a word? He was talking.
I know, and at one point, yeah, on my end, I started singing the Canadian national anthem,
I didn't
and
hear
I didn't
that
think
at
you,
all.
yeah, I knew you didn't, and at that point, I was just making noise to wait for it to reconnect, because I watched too many hockey games, that's why I know that,
Oh, okay.
because they always sing at both anthems before the hockey game,
Right.
so.
All right, well, have a fun time, and I'm gonna try to send you a little video. Congratulations from all of your friends.
Nice.
All
How
right.
about that'd be awesome.
All right, take care.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Just like the wild wind, sings a song that sounds like she's singing.